Hi, my name is Seema, baby and toddler sleep consultant at A Gentle Night's Sleep, reflux specialist and a somatic therapist as well. So I'm coming on here today to talk a little bit about a sleep crisis. And so often what happens is that when parents come to me, they are absolutely desperate to fix sleep and are at a complete loss and feel really overwhelmed with understanding where to start, knowing what steps to take. But also what I find is that sometimes people don't understand what sleep training actually is, and there's a massive assumption around leaving your baby to cry and not being able to attend to your baby. So that's the general kind of mindset that some people have, around what sleep training is. And that stops people from actually coming and accessing sleep training and, even inquiring about sleep support. So it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to sleep train your child, but just looking at general overall sleep support, people don't realise that there is non-sleep training sleep support out there that can help you with a sleep crisis. And those are the things that I offer along with sleep training programs. But as my work has evolved over the years, what I'm finding is that naturally I'm gearing towards coming out of your normal daytime routine, having I don't do fixed or strict routines anyway. I'm a massive believer in flexible routines. I have hardly worked with many people that have come and said, yep, we definitely want a strict routine. So I'm finding, as a mum of three myself, and I'm always looking at what my values are and how I am as a parent and the impact of my actions on my children, and what mums and dads come to me with, how they feel emotionally, what their values are. And as I'm finding myself look at my programs and my approach in my business, I feel more geared towards being more hands-on now. So less crying, more flexible routines, less focus on awake windows, more focus on baby's temperament and their sleep pressure, making sure they're not going down too soon so they're undertired, and that also causes massive resistance. But also, the actual methods that I'm using, I'm falling more and more on combined hybrid approaches along with habit stacking and looking at optimizing the sleep overall without having to sleep train. And, it might take longer for your child to sleep through, but even things like contact naps and having four naps when a baby's 4 or 5, 6 months old, instead of fighting to get consolidated nap lengths and feeling so stressed that the baby's not doing 2 hours at lunchtime. And, small changes where parents can actually start to feel more relaxed and bringing in a holistic approach, but also being a gentle and responsive parent while still addressing sleep. So I guess what I'm trying to share here and what I'm trying to say is that there is a way of being responsive. You don't have to leave your baby to cry out, and you don't have to do traditional sleep training. You can still optimize your child's sleep and work towards implementing softer techniques, hands-on techniques, and habit stacking as a replacement for constantly feeding to sleep or rocking to sleep. So if anybody's kind of struggling with a sleep crisis, you might not be ready to sleep train. You might not understand what sleep training involves. You might feel that that's the only option for leaving your baby to cry out. So where are you kind of placed in between if you don't want to go down the traditional sleep training route, or you're quite not ready to maintain or continue with the sleep crisis? So I come with lots of questions, come to me with lots of questions around, how can you get your baby to sleep? how can they get rested without sleep training? How can you optimize sleep? And a lot of the time, people just need some reassurance that they're on the right track, they're doing the right things. You know, there's no way that you can fail at this at all whatsoever. Yes, it is exhausting, and you know, sleep deprivation, obviously it's a real thing. But also when you're faced with an actual emergency, you know, it's really helpful to have some tricks up your sleeve, how to manage the situation, you know, and how you can overcome an actual crisis. So you might have a child that has major sleep issues and you're sleep deprived, but you're functioning and feel okay within yourself. Or you might have some night wakings and you might be completely wiped out, managing multiple children, have high levels of anxiety. And so the sleep crisis feels like an emergency that you can't get on top of, as opposed to something that, you know, will you ride out or they'll grow out of it, or, you know, it's kind of manageable. So a sleep crisis is an urgent and an unmanageable problem. So when sleep deprivation kicks in and has a negative effect on one parent, both or their relationship with each other and their children, you know, you can class that as a sleep crisis. So a sleep crisis could also be affecting safety if physical or mental health's running down. You know, life becomes a drag, not enjoyable, and negative thinking can set in. So along with body aches or high anxiety levels, hypervigilant states, short-term memory loss or trouble concentrating or brain fog, things like that, those are some of the signs of a sleep crisis happening. But it also can all lead to more serious incidences, feelings of isolation or running away. You know, sleep's vital need, and gaslighting parents by saying, oh, it's normal, sleepless nights, you know, are fine, you'll get through it, and welcome to the sleepless night gang. You know, these phases, they can be quite damaging when somebody's really suffering. And it could be just as simple as bedtime resistance or, you know, struggling to implement a bedtime routine. So, you know, offering tips and simple things that people can put in place just to overcome or get on top of a sleep crisis can really be helpful. So, as I mentioned earlier, you know, parents that are in a sleep crisis, you know, they find that they're too exhausted to find a way out, and they don't actually understand where to start or how to start bringing about minor small changes to get back on track. And that can obviously make them feel stuck and frustrated. And then people just kind of put things to the back burner and then just continue as they are. And people find that they're in sort of survival mode as well. So some of the things that you can do, you know, I'm going to just go off and list some strategies that I've put in place here. So when families feel that they've reached this stage, even a small change can really, really make a massive difference. So things like sharing your feelings with somebody, that can really be helpful. And you might find that people are in the same boat as you or didn't realise that you were feeling this way and, you know, are available to support you and help you. And be around positive people. So, you know, people that make you feel safe emotionally, that validate your feelings and emotions. Avoid gaslighting statements. If you're able to, if finances allow, look into postnatal doulas or childminders, or reach out to families and family and friends. Work on physical and emotional well-being. Make self-care non-negotiable. I'm a therapist myself, and I always find that the resistance that I'm met with, you know, when people come to me and say to me that I don't have time for self-care, I've got multiple young children, I'm super, super busy. You know, I'm a mum of three myself. I've got a 4-year-old, 7-year-old and 9-year-old. And I completely understand how it is to juggle multiple young children. But I always say to people that it's your priorities and your mindset. So if you think you're not, if you think you don't have time, then you won't make time. If you say to yourself, right, this is an absolute priority for me, I'm going to make this non-negotiable, and I'm going to sit down, and even if it is 5 to 10 minutes every single day or every 2 to 3 days, with a cup of tea, no gadgets, and just slow down, stop and breathe. Check in with yourself. See what's coming up. See if you're triggered about anything, okay? So slowing down means that you will be more present in the household and you will feel better within yourself. And then that gives you the ability and the clarity to then deal with some of the sleep stuff. You can also look at accessing therapy to look at if there's any underlying mental health issues with yourself or your partner, things like postnatal depression or birth trauma signs. You can look for things like, this is with your own sleep, nightmares, high anxiety levels, flashbacks, mental fatigue, physical exhaustion, or being hypervigilant at nighttime. So when I sleep train with families, I always say to people that I'm not just sleep training your child, I'm looking at every single person in the household, their sleep as well. And often with mums in particular, if the night wakings are quite severe and they're quite ingrained, even when baby starts to sleep through the night, mums are waking up because they're subconsciously thinking that their child's going to wake up, or if their child's breathing, or if their child's okay, and they can't quite grasp the concept that their child has started to self-settle, so they then can't relax and don't go to sleep. So you want to look for hypervigilancy at nighttime. Some of the other things that you want to be looking at doing are having three meals a day with plenty of water, try to batch cook maybe on weekends, keep meals simple. You know, there's no need to go all out. And, you know, even when you're weaning your baby onto solids, and again, this is another thing that I find when working with, you know, younger babies, parents often have this unspoken pressure on their mind to make sure that their child, that their baby is on three solid meals a day and two snacks a day, even from 6 months old. And I always say to people that solids tend to not really click into place until about 8 months old. So keeping mealtime simple, and you don't have to cook separately for your baby. They can have whatever you have, minus a bit of chili or salt and spices and things like that. And baby-led weaning is absolutely fantastic for that. So some of the other things that you can do is that if you feel you want to, book an appointment with your health visitor for a little bit of extra support, or your GP. You can then also work on naps and bedtime rather than addressing night wakings. So what you do is, instead of going all in with the whole 24 hours, you just make minor changes, like, you know, adjusting bedtime, looking at what your child's sleep pressure is, you know, reducing gadgets, making sure that your child's having time outside in the sun, working on a nap rhythm instead of implementing a strict routine or teaching your baby to self-settle for naps. You know, there's nothing wrong with rocking, feeding, contact naps as well. I think half the issue that parents have is, you know, the external pressure to get your child sleeping, or what other people are doing in your circle and comparing your child to the next person. So even minor changes like, you know, doing contact naps on the go instead of thinking about, you know, having to self-settle is, you know, it's a massive thing. It can really, really ease the pressure that parents have, you know, on their minds. But mums in particular, I would say. The other thing that you can do is share bedtime with partners and caregivers. You can explore some nighttime sleep strategies with myself if you want to, as your sleep consultant. And if you're if you're feeding to sleep, you can switch to rocking, preferably with your partner, instead of feeding to sleep. So that's another thing that's called habit stacking. And so it just means that you get a bit of respite from, you know, constantly feeding to sleep. And so if you involve your partner in daytime activities, tag team, split chores as well, and the cooking and the cleaning, things like that. And then also, I think I've covered this a little bit, but knowing and understanding that night wakings and night feeds are completely fine. These things can be worked on slowly. If you choose not to work on them as well, that's okay. Just remember, your child will grow out of them. So you don't have to feel pressured to address every single night wake. waking, or drop every single night feed. You know, just do bit by bit, or don't even work on them. Work on the bits that you do want to in the daytime, and know that, you know, these are phases. You don't have, you know, you might have a 3-year-old, but you don't have a 5 or a 7-year-old waking up frequently in the night, you know, having a night feed. So they will grow out of it. You know, it's just about having realistic expectations and seeing what you personally or as a family can manage. The other thing that I would say is that do not compare yourself to your friends or your family. I often come across mums that, you know, say to me that it's so upsetting, I feel like I've failed, you know, my friend's baby sleeps so well and I don't know what I've done wrong and I feel like, you know, there's no way out. And it just, honestly, it's absolutely heartbreaking because every single baby is different. You've got some babies that can self-settle, but it is absolutely natural for babies to wake up in the nighttime, even up until about 2 years old. So I would say to you, definitely don't compare yourself to friends or family. It's also okay to keep daytime activities low-key and not to put pressure on yourself to attend baby classes. And I know it's nice for families to get out and about. I mean, I'm Asian, so I'm Hindu Punjabi, and, you know, I come from a background where, you know, baby classes are not heard of, sensory or swimming are not heard of. You know, my husband's from India, and when you look at culture back there, there are no classes. You know, kids are brought up in the park, you know, with 1 or 2 toys, with a late bedtime, massive naps in between co-sleeping together for you know, up until like quite a lengthy age, and then just given like 1 or 2 biscuits to calm down or just keep them busy. And it just makes for less fuss. You know, it just means that, you know, parents are less stressed, there's more community. You know, when there's low-key activities, it just means that you don't have to stress about getting a bag ready, doing naps on the go, whether your baby's going to feed, how they're going to be around other people, you know, if you're going to skip a nap, what happens with bedtime. So I would just say, you know, I feel personally activities are really overrated. And, you know, if you don't take your child to a baby class in the first couple of years, when your child is 4 or 5 years old, they will not remember, or they will not know if they went or if they didn't go. So either way, they're not going to be in any of the, you know, there'll be none the wiser. So just keep the pressure off with low-key activities if that's all you can manage. Obviously, if you enjoy going out, that's amazing. So the other thing as well is that you can look at your capacity to change and look at how urgent your issue is and prioritise what you want to work on first. I've already talked about catnaps as well. So if, you know, you want a catnap, contact naps, that's fine. But I just want to speak a little bit about catnaps actually. So you can give your baby an extra catnap if they've had some short naps. And the main thing is, don't feel stressed about catnaps, that your baby hasn't slept a really large chunk, or that they're never going to get it, or they're not self-settling, or they've not consolidated their sleep. They will get there. And it's like I've just mentioned earlier in the podcast, that the pressure that people have on, you know, put on themselves is unbelievable, because half the battle is must get my baby down, and my baby's not getting enough sleep in the day. You know, they're going to build up sleep debt, or I'm going to get into bad habits. And I think when you surrender and you let go and you just go with the flow, it eases everything up for you. So contact naps are fine, rocking and feeding is fine, and cat naps are also fine. The last thing that I would say is that to rule out any underlying causes of nighttime disturbances and health problems. So what that basically means is that, you know, if there's any nightmares going on, or if there's a medical issue going on, or if your child's suffering from high anxiety levels, or if there's a reflux or anything like that. So making sure that you are on top of any underlying causes of nighttime disturbances, and that there's no other medical issues going on. So that's it from me in terms of getting on top of a sleep crisis. And I hope it's been helpful to anybody out there listening, you know, even just to get a bit of respite, ease the pressure a bit off you mentally, and just to know that, you know, sleep will one day get fixed and it will be fine. Yeah, thank you so much.